Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. George Pelicanos is a major force in the crime fiction world. He's the best-selling author of 22 novels and story collections. All of his stories take place in and around Washington, D.C. George is also a prestige TV pioneer as a producer and Emmy-nominated writer on the critically acclaimed HBO series The Wire, as well as Tremé, The Deuce, and We Own This City. His latest book is called Owning Up. It features four novellas, all of which have a connection to real life. For instance, in The No-Knock, George revisits a terrifying event that his family experienced more than a decade ago. And the title story is one that George claims is his most autobiographical work yet. George joins us now to talk about these stories, why he wanted to write them, and why he chose a dark epigraph from David Goodis's 1955 pulp novel, The Wounded and the Slain.
That's one of the bleakest passages in noir literature. And Goodis certainly went there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's a head fake, because by the end of that story, the amusement machine, you see that what you do in life does matter. It's a complete opposite of the nihilism in that passage, which is saying that, you know, we're all going to die. It's just, you know, we're all going to be in a box someday. Nothing really matters. And the guy in the story, the co-protagonist, Ira Rubin, has been led down the path by a ne'er-do-well uncle who had that kind of attitude. Like, you don't need to work. Don't drive a fancy car. None of it makes any difference because we're all going to be dead someday. You know what I mean? And it's a case of somebody taking bad advice. But when the guy comes back, his partner comes back to the DC jail as a sort of quasi celebrity, he's become a character actor. He speaks to that and says that, talks about why people are artists, even though they know all about their mortality. The artist spit in the face of that. And what really matters is what you leave behind as a writer or filmmaker. So yeah, it's a little complicated, but that's how I wrote it. Yeah.
Your characters have differing opinions on the meaning of this phrase, the amusement machine. What does it mean to you?
Well, Goodis was saying life is like an amusement machine, and you get on the ride, then you get off the ride and other people take your place. And you walk into the woods and things get darker and darker. You can see the carnival still in the distance, but it's going towards blackness, which is death. And, you know, I really don't care for a lot of the noir literature that's out there now. I mean, post Goodis and Thompson and all that, because it's the bleakness is unearned in a lot of ways. And I just don't believe it. You know, I don't believe it. I think I wouldn't be sitting here still writing if I thought everything was hopeless. You know what I'm saying? So.
Oh yeah, sure. So I'm curious about, you mentioned that none of the current noir literature really resonates with you. There's not anything that you've read recently, any noir literature that has kind of knocked you out and kind of made you think, "Wow, that's good writing."
There's different kinds of noir. I'm speaking on the dilettante noir. That's what I call it. It's somebody who hasn't really lived a life or earned it to be going there into the darkness. You know, I read a couple of books a week, so it's hard to pick out stuff. But the one book that I really liked was, because I'm really bad with names, I'm not going to know the title. He's the writer who did a book set in the 60s, and then now his new book is set in the 70s in Harlem.
Is it Colson Whitehead?
It certainly is.
There you go. Yeah, Colson Whitehead. Yeah.
It was really impressive because there's a mix of darkness and optimism, which is really what it's accurate. It's what life's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. One of the novellas in Owning Up is called The No-Knock, and you've said that it is the most autobiographical thing you've ever written. How so?
Well, actually, I think the last story, which is the title story, Owning Up, is very autobiographical about my life in the 70s as a teenager around here. The No-Knock is autobiographical in the sense that it happened to my family. And my son committed a crime. I never say he made a mistake. He committed a crime. And the next day, the police did a no-knock raid on our house. And the first, I guess, about six pages of the novella, the no-knock, is completely accurate as to what happened that day. There's no exaggeration. There's no falsehoods. It's all in there. And that's all from my memory. And it happened 15 years ago. I saw black boots moving quickly and heard their pounding on hardwood. His sight line was on the family room, where he saw with relief that Angie had gotten the dogs outside. They were barking insanely now, baring their teeth and bumping their snouts against the rear glass door. And then his heart dropped as he saw something that he would never forget. Two men standing over his wife and their 13-year-old daughter, pointing their rifles at them, their fingers inside the trigger guards, his daughter visibly shaking. Her mouth open, but unable to speak, paralyzed. But the rest of the story then veers into fiction and what happens to this family, because in my house, it didn't have an ending like that. I was angry that day, of course. The main focus of myself and my wife was how to keep our kid out of prison. And so I put everything behind me that happened and just focused on how can we get the best result out of this.
Yeah. That must have been like a real shock to the system, to you, your wife, then, because this happened early in the morning, right?
Yeah, I was drinking my coffee and reading the Washington Post.
Yeah.
In my chair in there, like I always do. And I heard tires screeching, and I went, looked out the window and the front door window. And these guys had all come into our driveway in vans, and they were running towards the house with semi-automatic rifles and battering rams, things like that. So, yeah, I guess you could say it was a shock. I sure wasn't expecting it.
No, yeah, yeah. I read somewhere that one of the SWAT guys that broke into your house was looking at your books, and he said something interesting, which has come true. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yeah, he said maybe you'll write about this someday, and he kind of laughed. Right then, I knew I was going to write about it someday, but I needed time. I needed 15 years to elapse because I was waiting to have a sort of a happy ending, which there is one. When that happened that year, I took my son. He got 5 years probation. I took him down to New Orleans. I got permission for him to go out of state, and he got his first job on film crew on the show Tremé, which I was working on. And he's been in the business ever since, and he's in the DGA, Directors Guild of America. He's made a couple films. He's respected in his profession, and you know, it all turned out. It's just a big bump in the road.
Mm-hmm. In the no-knock, it seems as though the cops target your protagonist, Joe Caruso, because of his writing about the police. Was this a reference to your real-life work on The Wire?
I think so. I mean, I can't prove anything. The fact that that guy... So they have these meetings before they do the raid, and they talk about the people that might be at the house. And so I'm certain that they knew who I was in terms of not just writing for The Wire, but at the time, but my books. And I do write a lot about police. And if you haven't read me, then, or you didn't actually look at The Wire, you think that means anti-police. And I'm not. Matter of fact, I think this whole thing about defunding the police was ridiculous. One of the reasons we have such a crime problem now in this country is that the numbers in the police force are down. And one way to solve that crime is to have police presence out on the street. I don't mean hassling people or stopping somebody who's walking to their house because they're wearing a hoodie. I'm saying just a police car parked on one of the main drags with the light bar on. It's going to stop people from doing things. But to answer your question, I do think I was targeted. And in fact, my son's car wasn't even here that morning. They know what kind of car he drove. It also said right in the warrant that he never touched a gun. So one of his accomplices did. But they raided my house anyway.
If you don't mind my asking, what does your son Nick think of the novella?
Well, before I even sent it up to New York, I had him read it and give me the green light. And my wife, too. It's important that if I'm going to write about this, I want to make sure that nobody feels like they were betrayed or hurt. And of course, my daughter, I said 13 in the book, but she was actually 12 at the time. The point of it is that these kind of events ripple out into the family. And, you know, you have to be careful with what you do. I mean, the no-knock raids don't work. That's the main point of this thing, is they very rarely get the guns and the drugs that they're looking for. And innocent people have been killed. Police officers have been killed on these raids. And in the red states, especially, they've outlawed no-knock warrants because they have stand your ground laws there. In other words, somebody could shoot a police officer coming into their house under those laws. All you have to say is, I didn't know they were cops. I thought these guys were just coming in to rob me or something like that. So they've outlawed them. And I'm hoping that nationally this thing gets outlawed too.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope so for sure. And your daughter, you mentioned your daughter. She, correct me if I'm wrong, but she experienced a lot of PTSD after the no-knock incident, right?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know if she'll ever get over it, but she's doing fine. It's just something that sticks in your mind.
Of course, yeah. I'm glad to hear she's doing well. The third novella is about the Knickerbocker theater tragedy of 1922, and I was not familiar with that at all. Why did you decide to write about that?
That started as a novel that I was going to write, sort of a big sweeping novel in the years 1919 to 1923. So I bookended it with two events, the riots of 1919 and then the Knickerbocker theater disaster. And so what happened was I wrote about 10 years ago, I wrote the first chapter of a book. And well, I liked what I did, but I didn't know if I could sustain it in a novel, sustain the voices and so on. So I put it away. And then last year I went into my files and I saw this file and I remembered that I had done a tremendous amount of research before I started writing. So I had all that. And then in the file was some papers with my mother's handwriting she had given me, and also a voice recording I still have on my phone from my mom talking about her life in the 20s and back in the in DC. And figured this could be a novella if I could figure out a way in, which I did. And I wanted to do it for my mother, who's since passed away.
I'm sorry. That's interesting, the mother connection. I wasn't aware of that. So let's talk about the title story, Owning Up, which deals with violent fallout in D.C. And you say it's perhaps the most autobiographical novella of the four, right? Can you tell us a bit about that one?
Well, it sort of describes my life in the 70s as a teenager. And my parents, I lived with my parents, obviously, but both of my sisters were older than me. So they had gone away at that point, and it was just me and my parents. And I worked in an appliance store like that. I was a stock boy first, and then they made me a salesman and so on. And there's basically a lot of, it's a lot of smoking pot, drinking beer, riding around in your muscle car. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that stuff is in there. It wouldn't work unless we went forward to him as a 60-some-year-old man looking back on all of this, and hence the title, Owning Up. Actually, all the stories are really about that in some way, if you go deep into them, is that it's people looking back at the evolution of their souls over the course of their life.
Yeah, very well said. It is that, yeah. You're a big basketball fan, and this tragedy that we've just been talking about in the title story has a connection to the Milwaukee Bucks superstar Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Can you tell us about that?
So in 73, there was this house on 16th Street, which is just, you know, down the road from where I live. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had bought the house, donated it to the Hanafi Muslims. That was his whole involvement. You know, he kind of got... You know, the headline was that he was involved or something like that, and he wasn't, because there was a mass murder in that house in 73, where some guys came down from Philadelphia and they killed a bunch of kids. I think it was seven people or something like that were killed. And then in 77, because the guy Khalif it was his family that was murdered. He felt like those guys were never really brought to justice. And obviously it had driven him to madness, because they came in and took over the B'nai B'rith building and the district building. and they shut down the city for 2 years. It was national news.
Yeah, yeah. What one through line in these stories or novellas seems to be the passage of time. Is aging something that is on your mind these days?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. You'd be disingenuous to say that it isn't, or I don't care.
Yeah.
I think the passage of time is the greatest mystery. It's death is not the greatest mystery. It's passing of time. It's something you think about every day.
George Pelicanos, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Owning Up.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
George Pelicanos is the Emmy-nominated writer, producer, and creator of several acclaimed TV series like The Wire, Tremé, The Deuce, and We Own This City. He's also the author of Owning Up. Find out more about George at wpr.org/beta.
I'm sure in their minds, Belushi and Aykroyd were promoting this wonderful music of Black America. I mean, no question that's what they were trying to do.
Coming up, journalist Daniel DeVase is on a mission from God to tell you all about the history of the Blues Brothers. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.